they think so far outside the box, which is ironic because like that would almost be a benefit to science if they reined it in a little bit. Like science is built on like the idea of questioning stuff and being like, let's take it a little bit further. Let's see like what we can build on. And there really is a problem in the scientific world of people being so staunchly against change, especially when someone has pioneered a field. It's like, I did all this work. I don't want like, you know, some young guy to come in and suddenly change everything. Like it happens like that in everything, especially in science fields. But like, that's the whole point of it. And so it'd be really interesting if these people like actually spent a little bit of time on their research and put all of that, you know, brain power and that inquisitiveness and that curiosity towards developing a real hypothesis based off of the fact and the, you know, research and evidence that was made by those before them.
I know I said I would made my last video addressing Mini Miniman, but Milo said some things in that clip that were so crazy to me that I had to just step in and say, Jinkies, this is like when SpongeBob made the jelly recipe for the Krabby Patties. It's like delicious, but it's also tainted with grossness at the same time, and it just makes you want to go, bleh! So I felt like I had to weigh in. My first plan was to shave so Milo wouldn't know it was me. Then my son said, you look like Charlie's long-lost father. And I said, well, I can do obscure cultural references too, and talk in a monotone voice, so like the puppet being hidden in a bunch of ETs, or a ET being hidden in a bunch of puppets, I'm hiding in the midst of much more popular YouTubers to make this criticism of Mini Minuteman's position that... Alright, that's enough of that crap. Sorry, guys. I told my kid I would do that something like that one of these days. He saw me and shook his head and told me I had to now, so here we are. Anyway, Milo did say some things there that I completely disagree with, so if you give me a minute, I promise not to do any more impersonations this video, and I'll explain to you what I mean in all seriousness. Hi, I'm Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Milo's dead on here. We see a lot of passion and research that goes into a number of pseudo-archaeological claims. Some are grifting, but a lot of them, the guys really are true believers, and they put a lot of effort into it. But expecting these guys to, like, elevate that to a scientific hypothesis, that's pipe dreaming, in my opinion. I mean, these guys would have to, like, go to school, learn the lingo, make sure they don't say the wrong words, make sure they do say the right words, be subject to all the slings and arrows a normal academic paper is, which a lot of these guys are not interested in at all. Just the compiling the data and fleshing out a formal hypothesis in a formal manner. We're talking about two completely different breeds of person here. So expecting these guys to do that, you're going to find people few and far between that fall into that camp. Like on rare occasions, we get people like Janet Stevens who come in there and she's like a hairdresser who's like, oh, you know, I think that this Roman hairdressing that they've got in the history books is wrong. I think that I've got a better idea. And she comes along and cracks the code, co-authors a paper with an archaeologist. That's an important distinction. She didn't just go do it on her own. She hooked up with an actual professional who would listened to her and fleshed out a hypothesis and published it. But for the most part, these people aren't interested in doing that sort of thing. A lot of the times, they just don't want to deal with that side of it. They're dreamers. They're not skeptics. When somebody from outside academia comes up with a novel hypothesis, they frequently find themselves at odds with the very fields of science that they need to find support from. And so it ends up causing this whole big mess where if you want somebody to come from outside the field and who's a dreamer, and come in and flesh out that scientific paper, you need like mental ambidexterity, which is, you don't have a lot of people that do that. Just look at the entire sphere of pyramidiate stuff that you see on the internet, and it's very, very much in distinct camps with a few people in the middle. There's a lot of times that pseudo-archaeology has sent the thinking down a different track, and a lot of times that does come up with like real-world scientific results that advance our knowledge. Like, as I talked about in my last video, for example, the data that Ben's presented with those vases, if that data bears out with the vases with better provenance, this is a smoking gun for a lathe a couple thousand years or so before it was supposed to have existed in ancient Egypt. That's a big deal. That might not be a big deal in the way that he wants it, but it is definitely a big deal to science. But it's being kind of neglected because, well, it's coming from a pseudo guy, right? So this is something that I think, in the modern day, we're seeing a lot more of this separation that... I think a lot of it has to do with kind of a culture war attitude on the internet, and I'm not going to get into all that, but it does seem to be like this dividing line, and people are fighting back and forth over pyramids like it's, you know, something serious, and it's kind of, well, this is one of the results that we get. Now, another great example is History for Granite recently investigated the chimney in the Bent Pyramid and got far more data and better pictures than any scientist has brought to the bear so far. So that's pretty impressive. And he did it completely legally and everything. Check out his video after you're done watching mine and, you know, all 20 bazillion of my backlog and stuff first, of course, too. But make sure and check out History for Granite's video on the Bent Pyramid. It is pretty cool. Now, I'll give you a metaphor here, something most of you will get, hopefully most of you. Sorry for those of you who don't. I used to play a lot of Magic the Gathering in the early days. It's a collectible card game, for those of you who don't get it. Like, you make a deck, and the cards combine together to do different things, right? The cards will have synergies that work better together than the sum of the parts. So I was playing this in the early days, and Spokane is right near Seattle's where it came from, so we had a lot of test marketing cards here. We had a lot of Alpha. I owned a lot of the Power in the early days, for those of you who know what I'm talking about. I owned a couple sets of Power 9, to be honest. I played a number of tournaments in the early days. Point is in those days, it was called net decking. If you just copied the deck that you saw on the internet, you saw some guy won a Pro Tour qualifier, you just copy his deck verbatim, we would pick on you for that. You were expected to at least innovate some, pulling some features from, well, duh, you know, use what works, but completely copying it was kind of messed up. So there was like three different groups in town of people, and I was in one of them, of like the good players, and we would all crunch our brains together to make decks. And you really see two kinds of thinking going on. You saw dreamers that would be like, I wonder what would happen if we put this card, and this card together. And then you saw the skeptics that would be like, man, that's not going to work, or, oh, that might actually work. And they were all like math-driven and like, And there wasn't a lot of overlap. I mean, there were people that were riding both sides of the fence, but by and large, people were excelled in one and just barely could get by on the other. A good Magic deck player, in my opinion, back then was one of the two. He was either really good at dreaming it up, and then he would kind of lean on one of his buddies and help me crunch the math on this. Or he was really good at crunching the math, but he might have missed an obvious card for his combo. So anyway, you can see my point is different psychology leads to different things. The two working together created better decks. And just to give myself a little bit of like clout here to let you know how good I was. When Mirrodin was a new set, but the next set hadn't come out yet, I forget the name of it, Darksteel. I didn't play much in Darksteel. The last tournament that I played that was big, I played a Affinity deck that I used Atog, where people ended up using Arcbound Ravager down the road, and basically I broke Disciple of the Vault before it was broken, and I won a Jazam Dejin. Second place in that tournament was a Beta Underground C. This is 2003, 2004. So that'll let you know how much prices have changed since then. Anyway, excuse the Magic Nerd rant. Back to the regular show. But my point is here is when we try to crack these ancient mysteries, a big portion of the people doing it are dreamers, and they're not number crunchers. They're not going to get in there and flesh out a scientific hypothesis. And so instead, they end up throwing something out there that looks very much like pseudoscience. Because it is. It needs the science part to back it up. But we get guys like Dr. Miano that say things like this.
I do believe that some people throw the word pseudo-archaeology around a little too freely. I do not agree with someone judging something to be pseudo-archaeology before looking into the matter. However, there are certain claims being made out there that have been shown to be based on pseudo-archaeology. And so, when those claims get repeated, I don't think it's necessary for someone to reinvestigate the whole matter again just to make sure it is still pseudo-archaeology. If it walks like a duck. I hope that makes sense.
So the data that a guy like Ben brings out, it's just dismissed by them. They assert that provenance is crap for sure, and then they just ignore the data when it's quite possible that he's onto something there. Or History for Granite. His video on the chimney even, I've seen him get lumped in so many times with the pseudo guys. For example, Flint Dibble recently made a video about the Sphinx a few months ago, and History for Granite commented on it, and Flint said this to him. Good luck with your channel and research. I will continue to do real archaeology and sharing what I can with the public in my free time. Now, obviously, he was being dismissed there. You know, Flint just, you know, you're just a YouTuber. Go play around. Have fun with that. But the rest of us, we're going to do the real stuff. We're going to put on the big boy pants, and we're going to take care of the big boy science. But anybody who's like into the pyramids at all knows that History for Granted is one of the smartest people when it comes to this stuff. He's one of the most knowledgeable people when it comes to this stuff. He's on the cutting edge of pyramid research right now. He truly is. And he's not doing it with woo. He's not doing it with magic. He's following the data and common sense and putting it together and fleshing it out using technology that nobody else is bringing to bear on it, just simple things like photography and stuff, but he's examining it closely and not just following the dogma or jumping in line with a bunch of other people. Him getting lumped in with the Wu is quite possibly like one of the most messed up things about all of this, because he is bringing solid stuff out there. If he was co-authoring these as papers, he would have no problem, but he puts it on YouTube instead and he's just being looked down on. And I got to point out, we've seen this recently with legacy media and with YouTube and Twitter and whatnot, with like just basically, where's the news at now? And what does legacy media report on now? So-and-so tweeted this. Look at this new video that's on YouTube or on TikTok. Legacy media is social media's little bitch now. And academia is going to find itself there when it comes to innovations if it doesn't change its attitude on this. So he gets lumped in with the crystal peddlers on TikTok, and his data gets ignored. And that is a really bad thing, because to the people on the outside that are in the know on this stuff at all, even the people that are more woo-minded recognize that history for granted's not. And so when science is like, no, you're just wrong because... this is a bad look. This is a really bad look. And I'm not saying that Flint is saying that exactly, but this is a consistent position that we see of, well, you're not a real scientist, so your data's not really that good. Why don't you give us a fleshed out hypothesis? Instead of you guys grabbing that, instead of the scientists grabbing that data that was brought to them and evaluating it, they just dismiss it out of hand. And some things are worth dismissing out of hand. Some things you can look at and dismiss in 5 minutes. When somebody says geopolymers and they're talking in an area that you can see stratification lines on the rock they're claiming is made of concrete, okay, we can probably figure that geopolymers are out there. But some things are not so outlandish. The data that Ben brings about those vases, it's not crazy. The stuff that History for Granted has brought up about the chimney, it's not crazy at all. A lot of the stuff he's brought up is not crazy, but it gets ignored just the same. Lumped in with Ben's vases, which is lumped in with Christopher Dunn's Electric Pyramid, and we just looks like a duck. Now, my point is this. We're all different people, and psychology has a huge part to play in this. The Bens of this world, they're not going to stop trying to prove precision and ancient high tech with those artifacts. And the Dr. Mianos of the world, they're not going to quit discarding that crap and just dismissing it by guilt through association. And the many Minutemen of the world, the people like you, dear viewer, the people like myself, we have the chance to kind of jump back and forth between the camps, to take the wheat and bring it over to the scientists and leave the chaff over in the woo camp. And yeah, that's a lot of work, but we kind of need academia to advance the knowledge base, because their skepticism is important. But if they don't look at this data as it comes out, they run the risk of falling behind like legacy media. I mean, they're looking at it right now. When they've got... just go watch History for Granted's chimney video. Just go watch that. And when you see how much he did with how little, that academia, just, they could have done this 10 years ago, but they didn't. And it's a damn pyramid. All right? So... anyway, I could babble about this all day, of course, but thank you so much for watching. I really appreciate your support. I uploaded my newest Patreon exclusive video. It's a pretty good explanation of a lot of kind of esoteric aspects of archaeoastronomy. $2 a month gets full access. $5 a month, and I smile a whole lot more at you. Links down below. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.